All right, everybody, what's up?
What it is. Welcome back to the Blunt Force Gamers Podcast.
Woo!
Yeah!
I am joined this week by my co-host,
Darth Blasphemous.
As always, we've got
Kazarkat.
And our newest member to the troop,
Doc Martin.
Yes. Excellent.
Excellent. And of course, I'm your host, Game Goblin. So, we've got a couple of topics lined up for you this week that should be red-pilled, sort of, kind of, a little hot and heavy. We're going to start out with, dongs and clams, tomato paste stuff. I don't know.
Tacos and wieners,
that's a good call. So, with that, roll the intro.
Feeling tired at the gaming table? Want to hear foul-mouthed jackasses poke fun at gaming companies when they screw up? Want an honest, street-level opinion from a team of gamers that call it like it is? Then Blunt Force Gamers may be the podcast for you.
Listener discretion advised.
Okay, we're back. 20 seconds went by so fast.
It always seems to these days.
Yeah, well, nobody's got attention spans anymore. But before we get into our first topic of talking about gender fluid bullshit invading Dungeons and Dragons, I've actually, as the editor, found out that I did something bad.
Rut row.
Last season we had the Juice of Shame, which didn't turn out so shameful. So I got something even worse.
Oh boy,
I got something even worse. It's Bean Boozled by Jelly Bellies, and you don't know what flavor you're going to get. And the reason I'm doing one of these is because, you know, I wouldn't make up a rule if I wouldn't obey it.
Where's the bucket?
No bucket. So, of course, as poorly democratically voted in leader, I've got to obey my own rules.
We kind of shanghaied him into the lead position.
Yeah, they did.
No, we literally threw a rope around his leg and keel hauled him into it.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
That's about right. Anyway, during editing, I found out that I did railroad the shit out of you, Kazarkan, about twice.
Ooh, so, double beaning it.
Double dipping on the beans here, because I railroaded you about twice. You didn't call me out on it or whatever, but hey, rules are rules. So, I'm going to flick the thing here, and my first flavor may be lime, or it may be lawn clippings.
Either way, not that bad.
Either way, Okay, so that's a clear green one here with no flakes in it.
Okay. Yep.
That's lime or lawn clippings. It is fucking lawn clippings. Oh, it's horrible. Okay.
Watching his face is fucking priceless. Dude, and he's got to do this again.
I have to do this again. All right, my second flavor for steamrolling you is, oh God, just the name of that alone.
Say it.
It's strawberry banana smoothie or dead fish.
Ooh.
So
after lawn clippings, anything's a bonus.
I don't know. Dead fish, dude. I'm not big on Japanese cuisine.
It could be fresh fish.
Let's see. It's a slightly brown-looking one with red flakes, so I guess it's this one here. So, my punishment for railroading you is, please be a smoothie. It's a smoothie! Okay.
Came out on top on that second one.
Okay, there we go.
It's the white one you need to fear.
Yeah.
Rotten milk.
So yeah, I'm only doing that because that's our rule on this podcast is no railroading other people when they're talking.
Yep.
Something to be aware of there, Doc Martin.
Yep.
All right. So
welcome to the fun house.
Yeah, welcome to the fun house. So our first topic is something that should not be existing in Dungeons & Dragons, D&D, D&Dizzle, Rifts,
Pathfinder, etc.
Shadowrun.
Role-playing in general?
Role-playing in general is gender fluid elves, or gender fluid anything. It defeats the purpose of role playing. It really does. Because what's the point of role playing?
To be someone other than yourself.
Exactly. And even in a high-tech game, you can get away with switching genders on a whim or switching races or whatever. It's called nanotech. Or shape-shifting.
Or just potions in general.
Or just potions in general.
Or other types of magic. If you've got a desire for it, the chances are good, and you talk to your GM about it, because, you know, that's important. You talk to your GM about it, they'll find a way to give you that option within the game.
Yeah, I don't think you really need a rule set to just say, hey, this week, could I try, you know, turning into this or, you know, becoming that? The DM should be open to discussion. I mean, he's your DM. He wants there to be everyone to have fun.
And I may sound a little devil's advocate here, but, you know, play as whatever you want, people. I mean, I've seen games on YouTube that are professionally done, sanctioned by the higher powers that be, where that was totally a thing, where they used the illusion spell to look like whatever they wanted. And hey, that's cool. That's a way to roll into your play. You know, you're playing the role of your character. But, I mean, the whole rule set thing, yeah, it sounds a little funky, but, you know, it's just paper. As the game's operations director, the world is as you say, and if the players don't like it, well, you can either kowtow to them, or you can tell them to find another game if they make it a big issue.
By one news source, and I use the word news source
gently,
very liberally here, because, well, one, they are liberal, and two, they don't deserve the word news source anymore, is HuffPo. But they're, according to their blog, new Dungeons & Dragons rules embrace diverse gender identities and sexual orientation. And that's their headline there, of course, and wow, their article is pretty shit. But apparently they're adding in a new rule set to the upcoming D&D expansion that allows for elves to switch genders once per day at will. Now, again, this is a total bullshit maneuver because in the game of Dungeons & Dragons, we have this thing called magic. And already, if you want to switch genders, races, species, whatever, they have this wonderful player class for it called Druid. Once you get wild shape, you can be whatever the fuck you want to be. A couple of feats, and you can be even more what the fuck of everything you want to be. You want to be a male bear? You want to be a female bear? It's okay. You're a druid. Nature doesn't give a fuck. At that point, once you got wild shape, you have it all. You want to be a furry? You're a druid.
There's also, just for the record, polymorph, which can do the same damn thing.
For anybody. Get it in a scroll, a spell, a wand, maybe?
Yeah, see? We've got options.
Considering your GM, you can have permanency cast on it so that you can polymorph yourself once per day into whatever you want to be. You do not need a rule set for what works just fine in homegrown house rules.
You know what it sounds to me?
What?
Like, just some rules lawyer wanted to add this in. They probably spent forever on Reddit or one of the other places where the loud minorities of the group, you know, the people who are a small percentage of the general play base, complain, but the big industry listens to them because it's online in a place they like. Because, you know, not everyone's a normie.
Or, you know, this is the other side of this.
They're screaming loudly! Oh, and somebody else is also, on another blog, taken note that with elves, specifically in the Greyhawk and the Dragonlance and the Forgotten Realms settings, they have this thing called Drow. And for those who are not familiar with the Drow Society in more full totality. Big words. Drow is a matriarchal society. If you are a man, you are scum, which is basically what Canada or Britain or America is trying to become. It is a drow culture where women rule and men are just dregs plowing fields. So, but with drow society, drow are what? They're elves who can switch genders. So why would you want to be a dreg when you just flip your gender to be female and be part of the elite anytime you want?
Well, you know, that's power politics.
It's power politics, I know, but still, I mean, just drow alone kind of debunks the whole need for elves to have a secret ability to flip genders on a whim, because, I mean, as we all know, elves could probably do that to begin with anyway.
I am trying to make a character that is doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make a character that has drag-like tendencies. Because he's trying to, you know, support an image of his sister, so. And that is an interesting thing, because it's like, well, one, a half-elf male is about the same weight as a human female. Yeah. And, I mean, at least with the statistics and how everything breaks down, it's actually pretty easy to do.
Okay, so one of the big themes in Mordenkainen is Tome of Foes. So, hey, they're bringing Mordenkainen back.
Wow.
Hooray! Yeah.
Is the concept that elves were once a mutable race. Their creator, Corellian Lethariv Flower Bud Moonstrider, was once an androgynous being, and elves could originally change their forms at will, although they eventually lost this ability when they descended upon the material plane. So, the time of man is over, more refugees, whatever, you know, whack, whack, squirt. And, however, according to Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes, some elves retain the blessing. As part of this blessing, they can choose their biological sex when they finish a long rest. These elves can choose to be male, female, or neither, based on their moods or feelings. Oh, so now an elf's fifis matter. Tell that to the dwarves.
Okay, I kind of see that as how things stand right now. We've got those of us who care about the mechanics and the way things work. We're the dwarves.
Yeah, we're the dwarves.
We're like, shut up and let's roll dice.
Oh, you fucking lily-livered, pansy-ass elf. I'll shove me boots so far up your arse, you'll be shining me buckles with your teeth.
You damned southern pansy.
You damned southern pansy, I know, right? Oh, they do not need to add in this forced diversity bullshit, though, into a game, especially when all you need to do is talk to your GM.
Or read into other stuff a little. That's how you find the fun stuff. You get into story elements or spells or these really obscure printed once in a book, but it's still canon things where you can do whatever you want. I mean, you made a goddamn ICBM.
Yes, I did. I made an ICBM because that king owed me 500 gold pieces. Yes.
That's such a petty reason, too. Beautiful.
It was not petty. It was that. Look, that kingdom deserved to be nuked. The king owed me money. It was just, if I don't display a few teeth, all the other kings and lords are going to walk all over me.
Lannisters always pay their debts.
Well, I always collect my debts. That was the case.
Yeah, and 500 gold is a life sum.
Hey, to a commoner, that's a lot of money.
That is. That's going to set them up for generations.
Exactly.
But, I hate to be the last generation.
Yeah, the way the game has always worked for, I don't know, since it was first written, is different groups have different things. And if I'm playing with a group who's mostly fur-centric, and I want to play a furry with three schlongs and six tits, I'm sure I can get away with it. If I walk into a group who's more fantasy-based, and what you are is what you are because the gods forged you that way, and I don't want to play that, well, I could always find a new fucking group. I don't need a group to cater to my fifis when I walk in with a rule set that says, oh, well, I can be a six-titted furry beast because my fifis are backed up by a rule set.
And, you know, the other thing on that is, like, it's a game. It is a game intended for people to have fun, enjoy themselves, and experience something vicariously through something else that they can't normally do.
Yeah.
I guarantee you none of us in this room can swing a sword with anywhere near as much effectiveness. Maybe one or two exceptions, as I'm getting... Fuck you.
Did we not... You know what? Jelly bean for you, motherfucker.
Yeah, alright, bring it.
Jelly bean for you.
Jelly bean!
I told you to silence the cell phones before I did. The podcast.
And the thing is, that... Oh, that was one of my keychains being in my phone because it thought it was lost.
Well, first finish your thought, and then we're going to give you your fucking jelly bean.
Alright, well, you know, like, a 10th level fighter is going to swing a sword better than anyone in this room, guaranteed.
Okay, you win there.
You know, and that doesn't, it's really not going to matter what kind of game. So you can do things, you know, like the 23 side strike, or some other equally silly bullshit. In a fantasy game that you can't do in real life. It's a form of escapism, it's a form of empowerment, it's a power fantasy, ultimately.
Ultimately, yes. I've played every gender that you imagine, plus genders that probably will never exist. Maybe they exist in hentai. But I have played a lot of crazy shit. I've also played people who have flipped races, genders, power levels, species, all that sort of shit without...
Probably generation gaps.
I am my own grandpa, but that was magical douche faggotry going on. But still, nonetheless, you don't need a hard-coded rule for this bullshit. All you need is the right game group and the right GM. If you want to play a transgendered elf who can flip your ability to have an innie or outie based on your feelings or your mood that day, there are GMs who will let that shit fly without a hard-coded rule.
And I think that goes into something we talked about before about joining or really just being in a playgroup is find one where you can have fun, do the things you want, but don't force your stuff on other people.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying that this is hardcore that, but if you're in a group where you have to have a rule set stated in order for you to do your thing because it doesn't fit into the GM's world, say they're running a campaign where everyone's human and you're running it literally like it's, you know, the Middle Ages straight, but there's some magical things and it's not super high level magic. But you want to be, you know, some weird aberration from the umpteenth realm that, you know, casts rainbows. But it, you can't do that. Find another playgroup, honestly, because it's best for your sanity and for the rest of the group.
And, you know, tagging back on this, it's like, you shouldn't be trying to force your ideals on other people. It's relatively okay to try to convince people in-game if the character's motivation is there. But don't do it to the player.
Actually, I was good about to just say that, but you capitalized on it pretty well, is that it is rude as fuck for me to walk into a game group and demand that they cater to me to make me feel more comfortable. Why should I make four other people feel uncomfortable around the game table just for my own benefit?
Exactly. And, you know, if you're not going to do it politely, shall we say. Oh, I'm getting handed the box of doom. Have you already spun this?
No, I did not.
You spin it.
All right.
Okay, so we're going to take a break for a moment while Kazrakan takes his jelly bean. We did say silent cell phones beforehand.
And I fuckered it up.
What'd you get?
I got Tutti Frutti or Stinky Socks.
What's it look like?
Tutti Frutti or Stinky Socks coming up.
Cream with a whole bunch of different weird color splotches.
Okay.
I took a white jelly bean and then speckled any form of paint on it.
So he's getting his speckled jelly bean out.
I'm gonna make sure it is the right one.
See, it's really gonna suck if I get one of these because, God, I hate eating that much wax.
Yeah, well, silence your cell phone. Don't railroad anybody.
Yeah.
It's not that hard, dude.
All right, well, I think that's one.
Okay.
Mazel tov.
Mazel tov.
Try not to tap the table.
Yeah, that's the other thing we're trying
to do. Yeah, don't tap the fucking table. So he's eating his jelly bean now. He's considering the flavor.
Oh, his face.
His face is getting weird.
Well, it should also be noted that I'm not a fan of Jelly Bells anyway.
Yeah.
Or Jelly Beans in general, and that definitely tastes like socks.
How do you know that?
I don't. I don't want to know, but it doesn't taste like Tutti Frutti.
Yeah, who the fuck taste tests this shit?
Okay. I saw a video once for the other guys at Jones Soda.
Yeah.
When they were making something for, I think it was the first time the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl, where they did the football package of Jones. You could drink sweat, NFL turf, or football. And literally they sit there with all these little chemical vials and just drop until they can get it to where it gives you the smell and what they believe would be the taste of something they can't taste.
There's something you don't want to taste.
Also true.
All right, so
punishment.
Kazrakan has been summarily punished. Yeah. So back to hermaphroditic elves and the fact that we're being forced to now accept them into our gaming, even though we would never have the need to begin with.
It seems ridiculous to me, like a money grab almost, that Wizards is pulling something like this to cater to the vocal minority, which, you know, is realistically, it's the feminazis that are belting this shit out, or the SJW bullshitters.
Which is actually hilarious, because if you look at any data out there on companies that have gone full potato SJW, their business model begins to crumple. It erodes the very foundation of their business. And as a former businessman, the whole point of having a business is to make money, to turn profit. And when you embrace a ideology that does the exact opposite, your company is going to fail. So for Wizards to think about doing this as a money grab, they could readily turn around and look at EA and say, hey, how's Mass Effect doing?
Shots fired.
Yeah.
So I'd have to go with, did no one remember the South Park episode, The Underwear Gnomes?
Yeah, The Underwear Gnomes.
Do the thing? Question mark. profit. That's their entire model at this point. When I'm fully accepting on people, our playgroup before our playgroup broke up was really diverse. We had people from many different backgrounds, and we were all just friends. Most of us are still friends today, and, you know, you don't have to force these things on people. Yeah. It happens organically. Like, there was one of the podcasts, which is what made me quit watching one of the channels that was about gaming, where they basically were giving a tutorial on how to go out and find someone of XYZ, whatever you want to try and get into your group, and kind of...
Tried to shoehorn.
Yeah, shoehorning them into your group.
That doesn't... No!
Why do you need a broadsword for a scalpel's work?
Mm-hmm. The thing is, our game group, when it first came together, yes, it was, could have been, I don't know, it was diverse as shit, though. We had everything but our token Asian.
And even then, we kind of did.
Russia.
Well, I don't think adopted counts in my case, but whatever. So, but the thing is, it was not forced diversity.
Yeah.
Everybody there was brought to the gaming table because they had qualities that were not based on race. They were not based on gender. They were not based on religious preference or any of that bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's because they had the skill set that I wanted running a player character at my table. And a successful business brings in talent who makes the business grow because they have the skills and they have the talent to help that business grow. Yeah. And when you try to force the diversity thing in there, these businesses happen to crumple underneath their own weight, like Yahoo. And Microsoft, they haven't really embraced the whole SJW ideology, publicly anyway. They're still doing just fine, while other mega million corporations are going, SJWism is good, and they're crumpling.
And, you know, things like Google, for instance.
Oh yeah, Google. Oh shit.
At work, there are restrooms. They're basically just a disabled room, one toilet, sink, a little bit of other stuff in there, but generally speaking, it's a bare-bones thing. Sign on it says, this is a bathroom for everybody.
I'm sorry if you can hear sirens, by the way. Those are our neighbors.
Done fucked up. Done fucked up real good.
Mm-hmm. Continue.
And, you know, the symbol is all wonky bullshit, but it's like, look, anyone can use this room. Doesn't matter your age, gender, identity, preference, what have you. You can use this room.
The parts that you have.
With whatever parts you have. And I think that if you're going to do the equality thing, just pull the I don't care card and walk off. It's like, you are you and I am me. That is that.
Side note on that, actually, when we were at SakuraCon, I kind of pulled my douche faggot tree jackass Pepe Le Pew card, whatever the fuck you want to call it. We were looking for Kenny. I was being a dick, dude. Honestly, that's the way I am.
Edgelordy.
And I go walking in, and I was with Darth Narciss, and we're both looking for a can, and, you know, taking turns and whatnot. And he goes walking in, he walks right into the restroom, and I'm like, okay, I'll wait until it's my turn. He comes walking out, so I go to use the restroom, and I look over, and the sign says, gender neutral bathroom. And I look at the sign, I look at the door, I turn around, I'm like, where the fuck is the men's room?
You know, when it comes to the bathroom issue, I look at it like, the bathroom in your house, does it have a sign saying male or female? No, it's a restroom. You know what? If they want to do this, the main thing that people have complained about to try and keep it towards men's room, women's room, is the safety of other people. Because it has been shown on both sides that people go into the restroom and say they're whatever, you know, rainbow ponies, and someone gets assaulted. One way or the other. It doesn't matter what they're packing, just... We want to prevent that. So let's just screw it. Let's do 30 restrooms. They're all individual, single, somewhat locking door. You just walk in, do your business, get out.
On the topic of bathrooms, which is going to be hilarious because I'm going to segue back into transgender elves here in a second. But the whole thing about bathrooms in one weird regard is you got like a guy who identifies as a female who goes into the female bathroom. He will be shunned and kicked out because they're like, oh, it's unsafe because it's a female-only space. Mm-hmm. Whereas we're guys. If somebody goes into the...
Men's room
to take a sit-down to pee, normally we don't give a fuck. Normally, unless it's like very specifically not supposed to be there. We're like, yeah, they gotta go. It's nature. Mm-hmm. But just talking about bathrooms and transgender elves, I mean, how long is it before we're gonna have gender-neutral outhouses? Right? The characters go into town, they ride in, you know, there's the little crescent moon on that with like a man scrawled into it, an orcish or whatever, and then a female scrawled into another one, an elvish. And then they're like, the gender confused elf is going to be like, but I need a place to go too. It's like, when is this going to happen? I mean, that's one of the big problems I have about this, though, is...
It's the slope.
It is a slope. And I got into a debate with another guy about eugenics. I was pro-eugenics. He was anti-eugenics. And we debated it.
Yeah.
And I was coming from a very factual, scientific point of view. And he started off with the fifis. And so during the opening of the debate, I was like, fifis do not matter. Feelings do not matter. Progress matters. Right? Now, I'm pointing out, you know, scientific data points on how eugenics could work. And then he turns around and he actually, like, fucking just pistol whipped me with philosophy. And that's where he won the debate, was at what point is anyone who in a position of leadership qualified to instigate such a thing responsibly over a course of time? And then I thought about it, and he's like, well, look at all of our present leaders from history. So he hits me with facts on top of that. How many people have become people in positions of power who have abused that power? And so I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, from a philosophical point of view, you win, hands down. And that's the slope. Once you open that door, it's hard to close that door. So when we get into this whole transgender elves in Dungeons & Dragons, that door is beginning to open now, and now we have... an access for other things to be introduced to it that really don't need to be in a game because it's supposed to be fantasy. It's supposed to be fun for everybody at the table. And adding a hard-coded rule into that, for a lot of people, is not going to be fun.
And, you know, it still dials back to the system already has a plethora of means by which to accomplish the same thing. You don't need a new mechanic to cover the same thing.
You could get a belt of masculinity, femininity, one of the most classic fucking cursed items from the entire game series that's been around since, I don't know, pre-AD&D. Slap that on and, you know, maybe have the magic user make you one that works once per day. Same deal. You don't have to be an elf and you get the same power. All you gotta do is put the belt on when your mood or feelings justify it.
Or even better, you got a person making you a magic item that can do that? It can be anything. Don't gotta be a belt. You can have a ring.
Yeah.
You got a gem on the ring, and if you turn it this way, it does X.
Or like
you
turn it that way. Polymorph.
Exactly.
Or even simpler, just have a character that maybe has a different personality that involves that other gender.
Exactly.
It makes it interesting. You know, it's like, I don't know who this person's going to be today. It could be the male or the female or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that point you need to know.
Him, her.
Yeah. Zer, whatever. Yeah, I'm just waiting for the fucking pronouns to hit. Yeah. It's King Zer. What?
What? Must always start your sentences.
It's
with
Lord
him.
Majesty Zer thing. What the fuck? No.
They already got Star Wars.
I know they already got Star Wars. Star Wars is
sunk.
It's like watching the Enterprise D crash into the side of a planet again.
But that would be entertaining for me.
At least there'd be special
yeah,
effects.
Yeah, it's a slow motion train wreck. What's happening? They're opening a door with this rule that is not good, in my opinion.
Big, scary, and black voided.
Actually, I think the door has already been opened.
Already been opened, yes, but this is a very solid
shove.
Well, what I'm talking about is just like the, you know, like the door is wide open. Like RPGs, you know, Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, the door is wide open. We don't have all the inkling of how this universe works.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, they come around and add something to the universe. Well, they close the door just ever so slightly. Every time they add something. It's like you're putting yourself into a corner every time you add content.
Oh, I see where you're going.
I see. So, yeah, it's like open concept world, and then they do an update on the video game, and all of a sudden this whole section is cut off.
Yeah. Because they've already put something there that, you know, maybe it wasn't that great because, you know, it just happened to not be great. Yeah. Or it was great, but now we know that it's there, it's kind of boring to revisit it.
Yeah.
True. And you could pull the same thing off in many different genres anyway. And even in a high-tech one that doesn't have magic, nanotech, boom, problem solved.
Or, you know, failing that. If it's at least modern era, you can easily do something to the effect of surgery. It would take longer, it would be more expensive, but it would be doable. Yeah. It's within the rules.
Well, it's within the rules, but when you're doing a role-playing game, the whole point is kind of to throw reality out the door for a duration. It is power fantasy.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. But hey, you know what? In a Call of Cthulhu game, anything can happen.
And then there's that. There's games that are like, oh yeah, and by the way, you're fucking bug nuts. Have fun.
Or, I mean, yeah, there's different game settings where, like, there's even rules in Old World of Darkness and New World of Darkness, especially in New World, where you could make a discipline for your vampire to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So the option is there, and that's part of the problem that I'm having, is it also kind of kiboshes creativity.
It does, and, you know, every system, every RPG system that I have come across and looked at the rules, it has a segment that says, you know, the DM can add or subtract things by talking it out with you. Not necessarily so many words, but it's always there. Mm-hmm. Whoever the storyteller, the game master is, they have that option to go, you know, not liking the way this world works. For example, we'll take the cantrip Vicious Mockery from D&D. One of the podcasts I listened to changed it from a psychic damage, because the dungeon master for that game didn't like the concept of psychic damage, to being a charisma debuff, which is the DM's prerogative.
Well, it's the DM's prerogative. It actually makes sense, too, because charisma is basically the character's ego.
Yeah, and, you know, and then there's this stuff. But the point of the matter is the fact that every single edition that has ever walked this earth, and will walk this earth, and beyond, because that's going to happen, is it has the idea, you know, yeah, well, Goblin just gave me a face. It's like, are you fucking serious? You have that much belief in people?
Legit, dude. This planet is fucked.
I can't disagree with that, but I have expectations that we'll get beyond Earth before we get completely kiboshed. Maybe. Not the real point here. The point is that the storyteller has the power to change the rules to fit the story.
Absolutely.
Per our previous discussions, as long as they're talking about it with their players and then sticking to what they wrote, whatever it is.
Yeah, like I said, we don't need a hard-coded rule set for this. Every group is different, and if the group that you have won't cater to your fee-fees, it is exceptionally rude for you to go out and make the other people at that group table uncomfortable just to cater to you.
Yeah.
So find a new group.
And that's really something that's better for the individual having the issue and the rest of the group, because then it doesn't cause fighting. If they were your friends before and you just can't play that with them, they can still be your friends and you can go find another group. Or, you know, you can start a group for people specifically to do that. Because that's the great thing about this, is you can find new people. There are so many avenues to do that. You don't have to stick with the same group. If you feel like you can't play the character you want to play in that group, find another one. Because honestly, it's better for you to do that than to futilely try to chop away at other people's beliefs. And it's horrendous for you to try and force your beliefs onto other people in any way, shape, or form between anyone.
At the game table or in real life, which is basically what they're doing, is the in-game version of what people do in real life. Is somebody will walk in and say, I don't like this. It's offensive. I'm going to hurt everybody's fee-fees. Cater to me. I'm more important than anybody else in the room. Yeah. Which is bullshit.
And, you know, the epitome of arrogance.
Oh, I'm an arrogant bastard, but even I know better than to walk into a room and insult everybody just because, well, I happen to feel like a fucking demiurge, pandakin, transpans, liquid, sexual, non-binary, alien soul, turtle monkey thing.
That's a pretty specific thing. Are you sure you just don't want to just go changeling?
No, changeling have redeeming qualities.
Yeah, changelings have redeeming qualities. They actually have a reason why they do what they do.
Yeah, survival.
Yeah, it's called survival. Which is kind of more important than I want to be comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's the point. It's like, and then there's options like the changeling. A lot of systems have some form of changeling, which also can do pretty much whatever you want to do. You could be the elf.
Well, that's a pretty universal species in most games, is they have at least one shapeshifter.
Yeah, because everyone subtly understands that shape-changing is an interesting idea for a lot of people. You know, being, you know, the half-dragon, and then being the person and the dragon at the same time, or what have you, is an appealing concept for a lot of folk. Again, it's within the rule set, So you don't need the gender fluid elf rule.
No.
Yeah, it's like he was saying, you're basically lopping off creativity to import a hard rule when there were many ways to go about it, which leaves it open to creativity so that other people can discover a way to do it. And you could have been like, hey, we're going to put out a supplement that's going to give you how-to guides generally on how to do several things, or here's some more rules text on how these spells work and how you can manipulate them, something like that. Or hell, you can go to, what is it, Giants in the Playground, big discussion board for any role-playing system, and you can just put out there, hey, I want to do this, can you guys help me, this is the system I'm in. And within an hour, you'll have like 50, 60 people put comments. Yes, some of them are terrible, because people are terrible, but some of them are really good, like, dude, seriously, I did something similar, and I used this, you might want to look into A, B, and C.
Yeah, and then from there, you've got your own options of research, and you're like, huh, that's actually a really good option here. What the hell are they talking about with this? How does this work in? So you have more fodder to ask. It becomes now a social experience to find out how to do this, rather than just suckering it in on, you know, the knife edge with the shoehorn.
Yeah, I think most of the problem, though, is the fact that Wizards is embracing the SJW ideology and their virtue signaling, and they have not learned their lesson from their other products yet, that virtue signaling does not sell copies of games. Especially when you're a business catering to the lowest common denominator.
That's not the lowest common denominator.
Okay, well, one of the lowest common fucking denominators. They're catering to the lowest, most vocal people who don't even buy their products anyway. Or if they do buy their products, it's only for those specific things that cater to their fees. While the hardcore, tried-and-true people who get the season passes and buy every fucking book are left the wayside because they're like, oh, well, we've already got your money.
Yeah, and it's just, it's ridiculous.
Redonkulous, even.
Dorkulous.
Dorkulous. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Final thoughts on this subject?
Let's start with Blasphemous.
My biggest thing is, as someone who's an aspiring DM, I'm running my second campaign. Hopefully I'll get this one finished all the way and not run into problems.
I'm going to air fingers crossed for you.
Yeah. The best thing you can do is talk to people you know. And if you don't know anyone, there's plenty of forums and groups out there you can talk to where you don't have to meet IRL if that's an issue for you. But you can just communicate with people who have experience with it. Online, you can just comment. Heck, you can message directly to the creators and figure out ways to do what you want to do in the system. You don't have to have hardcore rule sets. These games are built to be open world where you can do anything, almost, within your GM's mindset. Try to find a cool way. I found something cool. You kill someone with magical power, guess what? Their magic is released all at once. You destroy a magic device, its charges are released all at once. It's really cool. You know the easiest way I thought to do about this?
Explosion.
I talked to friends. It started as a joke between us in the podcast. And it's not always an explosion. You know, it could be like you kill a druid and now a tree sprouts up and their body is like, you know, merged with it. So you guess what? Their items aren't there anymore. But that was something I didn't know how to do. And I talked it through with some people online and some people at work. And I found a way. There's always something you can do. Pass it off to the doc.
All right. So my final thoughts on this is just like, one, you don't want to breed animosity in between a group of players and then your DM. If you do bring this rule set into a game, I would be very vocal that you're going to use this character and make sure your DM knows that this is happening, because this could create a whole lot of bullshit that you don't want to do. Or if you do want to create a whole lot of bullshit with this, you're being an ass, first of all. But I mean, it will be nice to have a mechanic that is written out, but at the same time, don't be hard set on this mechanic. It is stubbing out, you know, your creativity as a player, as a DM, or, you know, just guy creating a damn world that he wants to use. And, you know, if you want to have a bunch of elves in your world that can gender swap at any time or do whatever the heck they want, that's cool. I mean, just don't force it on into a game unknowingly to the rest of the players or the DM, because that's gonna create too much animosity.
I'm gonna pass it off to here, to whoever's next.
Castrican, you're up!
Okay. Well, I guess we're going around the circle. You know, I think I'll agree on both of those points. You know, it's a matter of communication, like Doc said. It's a matter of talking it out with everyone involved, and making sure that they're on the same page, and they're not gonna, you know, be put off by it. Like, Goblin has in the past said things like playing to the player's fears for the DM trick.
Oh, yeah.
Where you would, you know, you would use descriptive terminology that would evoke someone who has arachnophobia. That they would get that shiver down their spine, because you're talking about a subject that is reminiscent of a phobia they have. Don't be an ass and just be like, oh yeah, by the way, spiders. Be like, you know, this is what I'm planning on doing. Yeah.
Sound effects.
Everyone does it. You know, and it does, like, don't be an ass. Just be yourself. Be who you wish to be, because that's the point of this. To have fun, to play what you want to play. And if your group is not going to condone that, that's not the right group to play that character. You might still be able to play with them and have a different character, and maybe the character you want to play won't quite work out as well with the next group, but you don't have to play a character that's going to cause trouble between you, the other players, and the storyteller. You don't have to do it. If you are, again, you're being a dickhole.
Well, my final thoughts on the subject is this shit was already here before the rules were even hard written or proposed to be hard written by WotC. And what it boils down to is that no one person is more important than the rest of the group. No one person should be able to dictate
the game.
Or even at the same token on a larger scale, no vocal minority should be able to dictate what rules go in and out of a mass-produced product. It is fucking arrogant as shit. Like you said, arrogant. It is the height of hubris and ego to walk in on somebody else and demand that you are better than everybody else and say that they have to change the rules of a game or their game group or the way the people even fucking act to cater to your feelings and what you feel is the best course of action to take. That is the minority deciding what is best for the majority, and it just doesn't fucking work. That is just basically nothing more than being a mini dictator. And these rules, the way all these games work, I mean, it doesn't matter. It could be Rifts. You've got the Splugorth and Splin. You've got Dungeons & Dragons. You've got Magic. You've got Far Future GURPS. You've got Nanotech. This shit has already been here. And all you need to do is be creative to get what you want. And as long as you're creative at getting what you want, and you know you've got a group that is comfortable with you going off on the deep end and doing this kind of stuff, you're set. There's nothing more to say on that. You are fucking set. All you need is the right group and the right game. And yeah. Little creativity.
And, like, that's the other thing. Is like, it seems certainly like creativity is just getting shot to fuck these days.
Well, our intro is 20 seconds long, so attention spans are shot to shit, too.
That
people
too.
Want the hard-coded rules in there in less than one paragraph to tell them that they can get away with this shit.
And that's kind of thing. Like, you look at it for RPG games nowadays. Like, you guys had Oregon Trail. I kind of missed out on it, but
I died of dysentery so many times.
Well, that's the same thing, is no one has that imaginative power now, it seems. You know, everyone wants it handed to them. Old RPGs were hard, and part of it was you had to imagine some of it. But the new stuff, yeah, it looks all pretty and wild, but it's basically a bloop, 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 you know.
Yeah, it's almost a railroad clicker to waste time.
Yeah, that's all the same.
Just a bunch of inputs.
Yeah.
Yep, so that is this group's thoughts on, well, SJW-ness, transgender elves being introduced into Dungeons & Dragons. That door is now open.
Or closed, rather.
Or closed, or something.
Why does there have to be a door, though? Why can't we just take the door off the hinges and just be afraid?
Are we assuming, are we now assuming the portal? What if it's a window? What if it's a screen door?
Why would we assume it's a room?
Why are we assuming it's a room? It could be a chamber, or a vestibule.
Or a cavern.
Or it could be a cavern.
Or an amphitheater.
Oh. You know what? Fuck it. Music.
Hey, come on. heavy.
Damn, that's some good music.
What? How did you hear this before I even make it?
It's the power of the dark side.
Whatever, you're more Jedi than Sith, dude.
Uh-huh. Even so, I mean, we thought we already agreed they were the bad guys.
Sure, the Jedi are the true bad guys. But we're not talking about Star Wars. That's coming next month for May the 4th. But we are talking about, and I'm taking the lead on this for a reason, because it's Magic the Gathering Presents Dominaria. We're going back to the origin, the hub planet or realm of the entire Magic the Gathering multiverse.
What's left of it.
True. I mean, a lot of shit's happened there. There was the Ice Age, the whole thing with the time bubbles. Just so much going on in Dominaria. So for those of you who are Magic players and those of you who aren't, Magic the Gathering is a trading card game that is... I think I'm slightly older than. It's been around forever. But,
almost as old as Goblin, back in the ages where dinosaurs ruled.
I started Magic the Gathering in Revised. That's what I walked into. It was when they just released Revised. So that was, let's see, Alpha, Beta, Revised, yeah, so...
Yeah, the third set.
Third set.
Which was really just like a reprinting, but still... We're going to Dominaria. It's coming out soon. And, well, I really want to talk to you, everybody, about the story. The story is killing me because the timeline. When I started Magic, I started in Theros.
Oh, Squee is back!
Yes, Squee is immortal.
I noticed.
You need a foil of Squee.
I do.
But, I started with Theros, and I got really into the story because Theros had a pretty good story. I haven't kept up since because I feel it's kind of eh. I'm not a big fan of the Gatewatch. Like, I like some of the Planeswalkers, but I hate Jace. Yeah. Feed me, trolls. I dare you. So if you read the older stuff, there's supposed to be, like, 10,000 years difference between the Brothers' War and modern-day Magic. You know? There was the Mending, and the Planeswalkers we know now are not as powerful as they used to be. Which is Nicol Bolas's whole bent, that's his whole story arc, is he wants to get back to that god-level power. But on Dominaria, where a whole bunch of this stuff happened, we're returning finally. And the timeline's not matching up, whatever, they can retcon it, it's their story, let them do what they want. But we're seeing some familiar faces.
I see Hypnotic Spectre right here, but under a new name.
Really? What's it called now?
Uroboros, the Empty One. He is a 6 casting cost, 4 colorless, 2 black... He has a 4-3 flyer. Whenever he deals combat damage, that player discards a card at random. If that player can't, you get to draw a card. So he's essentially an upgraded Hypnotic Spectre.
Yeah, functional reprints. They're great.
Yeah.
Speaking of reprints, Llanowar Elves. Oh my god, they're back. They're back.
Oh, come on. Everybody loves Llanowar Elves because the original art for those, they had the goofy headwear.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like, what the fuck is wrong with these elves?
But yeah, returning people, we got Jaya Ballard, finally a planeswalker. I remember her nickname when I first got one. The guy at the shop said, yeah, everybody calls her should have been a planeswalker because she had 3 abilities. You had to pay mana into them and tap her, but she had abilities that made her pretty sweet. We've got Karn returning, the immortal silver golem, but his official title is... Bloop, bloop, bloop. Karn, Scion of Urza. He's a 4 color, or a 4 generic, because there's a difference between colorless and generic. 5 loyalty planeswalker. With +1, reveal the top 2 cards of your library. An opponent chooses one of them, put that card into your hand, and exile the other with a silver counter on it. -1. Put a card you own with a silver counter on it from exile into your hand. Then neg 2, which I find kind of weird, is create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. Really spicy there.
Well, they reprinted Drudge Skeletons in a way.
Yeah,
but instead of regenerate, they get indestructible. So it does harken back to a lot of the stuff that I started with. I'm noticing a few of these cards, according to the spoiler site, have similar abilities to cards that have already been printed back when Dominaria was still the big plane to play around on.
Then they also gave us Icy Manipulator again at Uncommon.
Ooh, an Uncommon Icy.
Mm-hmm. And of course, our new Mox, Mox Amber. 0/0 legendary artifact. Add 1 mana of any color among legendary creatures and planeswalkers you control. So it's not the sacrifice ability, but it's still a Mox. They're pretty cool. The Weatherlight is back. They made it a vehicle this time, which... the vehicle thing I'm kind of cool with, but I liked how before they were just artifacts that existed and you tapped or paid mana or both into them to get abilities. Now they turn into creatures.
They brought back Homerids.
Yep.
Nobody liked them. Homerid decks were so fucking easy to beat.
Oh, and for those of you who are EDH junkies like myself, Teferi's got a new card. He's white and blue this time. Teferi, Hero of Dominaria. 3 generic, a white, and a blue for a 4 loyalty planeswalker, +1. Draw a card at the beginning of the next end step, untap 2 lands. Which is really cool. I mean, that leaves you up counterspell mana if you're playing him in that kind of deck. And then you can -3, put target non-land permanent into its owner's library, 3rd from the top. That is really nice, being able to tuck something away.
I'm seeing a lot of cards here on the spoiler site that do harken back to the old days.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Planeswalker stuff added in. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of these cards, other than the ones that scream out to us.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty of the mechanics themselves and how this is looking to be very EDH-centric.
Yeah, I mean, the legendary super type kind of have been plastered all over, and I get that's the mechanic they're going for because Dominaria, but this really feels like just a grab at EDH players, you know? And as an EDH player myself, I know we do a lot of business for them. We're the ones that hike up prices of foils, this, that, and the other. I mean, so the new mechanic with a legendary sorcery. You can cast a legendary sorcery only if you control a legendary creature or planeswalker. They're really powerful spells for, well, sometimes way too much mana. But still, you know,
they're supposed to be game changers.
I'm also seeing that this, not for EDH, but for other formats,
mm-hmm.
with the number of legendaries you got in here, this is, like I mentioned earlier, my Mirror Gallery cards are going to jack up in price.
They already have. They jumped.
Yeah, just so many legendaries in here that are really good to have, like Lyra Dawnbringer.
Mm-hmm.
She would be great with the Mirror Gallery out to be tossing down. So I can see in a Legacy format, definitely those are going to shoot up in price.
Yeah. I mean, something I really like about the set, though, not just to be on the negative stuff, is for the characters that we know are mortal and can die, we get to see their descendants, and they carry some of the same color, identity, or abilities as their predecessors. I mean, just to name off one of the big ones, everyone remembers, Captain Sisse.
And well, not everybody remembers her.
So she was a green-white legendary that would pull legendaries out of your deck. I mean, they put her in From the Vault Legends, for God's sake. Really good. So Shauna, Sisse's legacy, is a green and a white for a 0/0 legendary human warrior. Shauna, Sisse's legacy, can't be the target of abilities your opponents control, and she gets +1/+1 for each creature you control. So, I mean, if you board wipe, she's going to die anyways. She gets a 1/1 just for herself, so, you know, that's really cool. Can't be the target of abilities is kind of weird. I would have just given her Hexproof, because it spells and abilities, but...
Are you fucking kidding me? That's an uncommon.
Hmm.
A Mesa Unicorn.
Yeah.
2 casting cost, 2/2 with lifelink is now an uncommon?
Yeah.
I... Speechless. Words not forming.
There's a vampire from, was it Ixalan or Rivals of Ixalan? 2-drop, 2/2, 1 in a white vampire with lifelink. That uncommon, I believe.
Dub dub! Dub dub! I just found the spell here that it just... This is awesome, because I know I'm going to see it on the internet in less savory places.
Is it meme status?
Dude, it's called dub. Okay, so like from musical, you can put two of these cards down and be dub 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 da da dub dub, or
that's good.
Or dubs confirm. Right.
What color is it?
It's a white 3-cast cost aura, enchanted creature gets +2/+2. It has first strike and is a knight in addition to its other types. This card is going to Jerusalem to do some stuff. Dub confirms. Okay, I'm going to see this on some websites here in the future. I know it. And they're going to be like, they're going to put flavor text on this that's going to say Deus Vult. Okay.
Well, no, it turns anyone into a white knight.
Dub confirms. Yeah, I just, wow, dude. I know the people up at Wizards did not think of that one. This one totally slipped them. Especially with how SJW they're getting over at WotC being owned by Hasbro and all that shit. This card is going to get commandeered like a motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they've had slips before, like the Serum Visions promo.
Yeah.
It was called Bukkake Vision. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, and I wish I had a Serum Vision still. Wait, I think I kept one of the crappy-looking ones. But yeah, you know, stuff like that has happened before.
Ooh, I need that one for my slime deck.
Hmm.
Corrosive Ooze.
Isn't that a reprint?
Do not know, but it's a 2/2 which destroys equipment.
Yep.
Blocks or is blocked.
Yeah, it's a good sacrifice creature to get rid of somebody with a some good equipment going on.
Yep.
Don't confirms.
You know what? Here's something I want to get into that's new with them.
What's that?
The Saga enchantments.
Yeah, so let's talk about Saga, because this is something new to the setting.
So, as far as I can tell, the Sagas are all going to be cards that represent different stories that happened on Dominaria. Number one that they spoiled, and really the better one, is Phyrexian's Scriptures. 2 generic, black-black, for an enchantment. As a Saga enters, and after your draw step, add a lore counter, sacrifice it after it hits 3 lore counters. Your first one, you get put a 1/1 counter on up to 1 target creature. That creature becomes an artifact in addition to its other types. That's doing the Phyrexian Oil thing. How Phyrexian Oil would corrupt things.
I wouldn't say it was corruption. I would say it's more like a morality adjustment.
When you get your second one on it, destroy all non-artifact creatures. That's powerful. And your third one is exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards. That's pretty good. But
fuck your graveyard recursion.
See, yeah. Also, 4 mana across three turns of effect.
Fuck your speed token decks and fuck your graveyard recursion.
You?
Definitely. That would screw my Jund deck over,
and like, think about
instantly.
It. Enchantment removal, it's usually what, in white and
green?
In green?
Yeah.
Blue has some straight bounce stuff, but if you're playing red or black, you're kind of screwed, because with Theros, they brought up a whole bunch of black removal that destroyed non-enchantments, or I think there's 1 enchantment destruction card. But yeah, I mean, these are going to be game changers, and that's just one of the black ones. One of the better ones is Fall of Thran. It's a 6-drop, 5 generic, and a white for Enchantment Saga. As soon as you play it, you destroy all lands. Yeah, that's really gross, and it's only a rare.
That's screw your mill deck.
Oh yeah. On its second one and its third one, so you get to do this twice, each player returns 2 land cards from their graveyard to the battlefield. Well, if you play this in combination with the black one and exile graveyards, that's really brutal.
Because all of a sudden you have a 2-land advantage.
So, okay, now the question I have about this, because when I stopped doing Magic, for our listeners to know, around the time I stopped working at this game shop, which was a little over a year ago now, and even at that, I was still on the way out of Magic. Mm-hmm. I still was buying boxes and picking up cards because, hey, that's part of the job, is to know what the hell's on the battlefield. And at that time, in our communications between us as vendors and Wizards of the Coast, their representatives, they were trying to slow the format back down. They realized that the whole poison counters thing and whatnot had got ramped the game up to the point where it was 1 or 2, 3 turns kill.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even worth really shuffling your deck and playing because the games were so fast. So they were like, okay, a lot of the feedback we're getting from the community is we need to slow the game back down a bit. And that's, in my opinion, that's when games were best, is when I first started. And you could have a 3-4 player game take an hour because you were looking for that opening to take on one of your opponents. And even a 2-player game was still like 30-40 minutes.
Yeah.
And this new set, with some of the cards that we've seen here on the spoiler side and that you're listing off with the combos, does not seem to fall in line with that narrative.
If you're looking at straight mana costs, it does. Because, I mean, a 6-drop white enchantment, a 4-drop black enchantment, that's double black.
But if you're still doing green-white, there's that green ramp card now, which is a Saga spell, which immediately allows you to tap your creatures for mana.
Yeah, Song of Freyalese, when it enters, you get to put a lore counter on it. So your until your next turn, creatures you control have tap, add 1 mana of any color.
Yeah, so if you're doing a speed token deck or you're doing a Sapperling deck,
or you have infinite squirrels. I mean, yeah. I don't know anyone that does that degenerative stuff.
Yeah, but even
I do.
just even in this set alone, if you're doing a token deck with Sapperlings for your green mana base, and you're doing white with the disenchant on that, you can still pop that way before turn 6.
Yeah, and it's a 2-drop enchantment.
It's a 2-drop enchantment, so
even if you play that late game, that gives you value because now your creatures can also do stuff. You, in EDH, you throw Flash, the ley line that lets you play things that instant speed.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing about it, is they throw out all these cards, they playtest the bejesus out of it, but usually they only playtest it within the meta of itself, because they build these to be draft sets, and then you do constructed out of it. But when you start mixing in cards from sets, like, I mean, I can think of a couple cards from Aether Revolt and Amonkhet and Ixalan especially, where it's going to get gross really fast.
Yeah. I mean, even by itself, not introducing the other sets into the standard rotation, it's going to still be pretty fucking speedy. It's still going to at least be, for your average deck, a 10-turn kill, if that.
Well, I mean, right now, in standard, what little I've gotten to play, you've got some decks like Merfolk, super aggro.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Merfolk aggro, you can be turn 5 kill. But then you've got control decks that can drag it out to turn 15, turn 20 if they have to, you know. But it really just depends on the playstyle. Like, I have a modern deck that our buddy Narciss made that is built around one card. And the whole thing is to drag it out until you win by casting that card multiple times. And it all depends on what playstyle you're going for. The obvious thing is how in Eternal formats or older formats, Mono Red is a really cheap deck that wins reliably early.
Another thing I've noticed also from this set is the sheer amount of legendaries.
Yeah.
And so going into a non-legacy format, by going into more of a standard format, a lot of these cards are also going to have a strange effect. I really can't predict the value of these cards just yet, even though they are really great. They've got good casting cost prices to them for your special abilities, your power and toughness and all that. The thing that gets me, though, is one of the standard rules for when you're building a deck is if that card is really fucking good, there's no reason not to have 4 of them in your deck. Because it increases the chance of getting that really good fucking card. But with a legendary creature, if you have 4 of those in your deck and you draw 2 or 3 of them early on, you've got shit sitting in your hand.
Yeah, you got dead cards.
You've got dead cards.
But it's great when they finally remove that hard-to-remove legendary card you had, and then you just play another out of your hand.
It is always fun to do that.
But still, it's one of those things. I mean, for me, it's going to be interesting because it means now people are going to have to find ways to loop around it. And I'm sure there's a card we haven't seen yet that isn't on this spoiler, hasn't been revealed, that's going to be something to mess with the legendary. It would be great.
Yeah,
that would be a little too predictable if they didn't.
Things to mess with that, but yeah.
But if it's anything like previous sets, as you were saying, on the value standpoint, the last couple sets, because I just sold the vast majority of my collection at GPC. And out of the sets, the last couple standard rotations, or the standard sets that have come out, you'll get maybe 5 cards that are worth anything, and everything else is bulk trash. It may be a good card, but it's not the card that's winning standard. It's not. I mean, I know plenty of people have given up on standard because they can't keep up with the prices. They build these fun decks that are pretty cool and quirky, but if they want to win at all, they've got to buy in
Ugh, fucking wizards, man. That's a completely different topic, but still relevant to what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is wizards needs to slow the fuck down with releasing new products. I know the market right now is slowly going from bear to bull in some aspects. And once it's in a bull market, sure, they might be able to get away with this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But the number of stuff that they're releasing on their release schedule is just mind-boggling how an average gamer who's actually interested in Magic, even casually, can keep up with the amount of stuff that they're pumping out. And how fast also the average gamer, let's say Kazrakan jumps into it, he buys in on this set. By the time the next set comes out, his cards are almost all but irrelevant now.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the next set after that comes out, his cards that he picks up now are completely just useless.
Yeah, and I mean, the month of June is going to be horrendous.
And, you know, this gets in on things like, and it's not just Magic, it's other products that they're releasing too.
Which is also what's pissing me off about D&D right now. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, but they're still, like, I have a fairly good breadth of what's going on with D&D. This whole elves thing caught me a little bit sideways, but here we had our topic. You know, as they're continuing to expand their products, they are drastically changing how they're expecting people to be able to afford it. Because, you know, I am in a good position, relatively fiscally speaking, because I work two jobs. It means I have no time to play games, so I don't tend to buy them for anything that's not the computer, because that's generally what I have the time to play.
Absolutely. The younger Gen Xers, the Millennials, the Gen Zs right now, who are all in the workplace market, a lot of them are trying to make ends meet by either living very frugally or having multiple jobs.
Or both.
And when a box of Magic costs a little over $100.
120.
Well.
See?
A little over $100.
And that's just for standard.
Yeah.
If you want Eternal or a Master Set or any other byproduct, it's going to cost you, especially with shops upping the MSRP.
Yeah, and of course shops got to up the MSRP. And based on a bunch of variable factors, though. Still, $100 is a lot of money for somebody who's working more than one job to shell out, and is almost guaranteed to fucking break their bank if they're only working one job. I mean, right now,
unless they're getting paid really damn well, in which case I kind of want their job.
Yeah, no
just
shit.
To throw that out there.
Yeah, if they're getting a really awesome paycheck, I want their job. You know, because shit, mine pays crap. But yeah, for the younger Gen Xers, Millennials, the Gen Zs, the people who are in the work market right now in America, the price tag on the product they're putting out is a bit high, and they're just shoving this stuff out so fast that it's nothing more than just throwing a sponge into a nearly empty bucket and hoping that the sponge gets fully wet.
And, you know, like Blasphemous said, you know, it was, like, June's going to be a fucking hellhole month for anyone who's actually trying to keep up. Because unless you're planning for it, like, a year and ahead, a release a week?
Yeah.
No, especially at 100 drops a bop, or $100 a drop, that's a lot of dosh that you're throwing away. That is halfway, that is respectably decent concert tickets. That is car payment. That is, you know, rent.
For a lot of people right now, that's at least one-tenth of their rent.
Yeah.
If not more in some cases.
Oh, it's, or mortgage, for that matter, if you're lucky enough.
Yeah, or if you're lucky enough to have a house for a change. Yeah, the amount of stuff they're pushing out, what was the release schedule that you know of right off the top of your head?
Oh, let me pull it up.
All right. Well, while you're pulling that up, I'm just going to say, again, to reiterate the point for a third time, it's too much fucking money to be asking for a release schedule like that.
Absolutely. It's
so, Wizards, if somebody clips this audio out of this podcast and sends it to you, I'd just like to say right now, slow down, or I'm going to drink an energy drink and kick you with my energy legs.
God. Wait, we gotta put on lightning greaves for you first.
Yes, I need lightning greaves first, yeah. Energy power, energy power. Boom. Slow down. You know, they're releasing products like as fast as Kenyans can run.
So we've got the go ahead.
Oh.
He speaks. Before I wanted to ask questions like, do you think actually that Wizards of the Coast is losing money by pumping these things out?
Absolutely.
Because If they're releasing product every week, they're losing opportunity.
I would think on first hand, when a company pulls something like this, and speaking kind of from a more business standpoint, that they're doing this as a money grab because they're losing money elsewhere. They're hemorrhaging somewhere. And as it's been noted before on multiple various sites and whatnot, with the previous scandals, especially the Pedogate, crap that they had going on. They're hemorrhaging money. They're losing players. They're trying to make up for that. And they're trying to basically right now sandbag that hole. So by shoving out all this product, they're like, look, we're still here for the gamers. Look, we're still here for you. And they're still shoving this shit out as fast as they can to continue to attract the players that they still have back to the feeding trough and gather in new players. And I think that's why they're going for Dominaria right now on the big part, is because Dominaria is the realm people have been asking to go back to for a long time. So that's going to get back the older players. While some of the other products he's talked that have been mentioned are there to bring in the newer players. I think it's also a reason why some of these rules that they've been coming out with in over the last over 5 years that mimic other card games is to try to lure people from other card games back into Magic. I think they are actually losing money somewhere, and they're just being very quiet about it, which is smart. So, basically right now, we're at, to put it in the metaphor, we're people at a restaurant, we're dissatisfied with the restaurant, and the restaurant right now is throwing free appetizers at us as fast as they can to keep us to stay in there longer and say nice things about the restaurant. It's what Magic seems like, is they're just throwing us appetizers like fucking crazy as a desperate grab to keep us interested in their product.
Yeah.
That's looking at it from a business standpoint, that's what I see.
It certainly seems like that. Like, as a mostly disinterested party, like, I'm interested in Magic mostly in passing. Like, if someone's playing a game and I have the time, I'll stop by and watch with their permission. You know, I'm not going to just loom. But,
yeah.
You know, I'll be inquisitive about it. Like, hey, what's this card do? Because I can still, you know, long ago, I had that combo Seeking Mind, and I could see how they would play off one another. So it's entertaining for me to just kind of watch. I don't need to get invested because, frankly, I don't have the time. I might have the money, but I don't have the time involved to properly enjoy the game as I once did.
Well, I think one of the other issues, too, right now is it's no longer a casual game.
And that's the other thing. It's like, it was a casual game when I was there.
Yeah, when I first started, the first couple of times, and I'll say more than once here because there was a break I took for a couple of years. When I first started both times, you could sit down with a deck. You'd be like, hey, I got a deck. You got a deck? Great. And you sit down with somebody and you play for 30 minutes. And it was casual. The pacing was really good. There was never that, I got to go, 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 or I got this combo that'll go off in 4 turns and just fucking wipe my opponent out. Unless you're playing the Black Lotus Channel Fireball combo, which cheapens the game.
Yeah, and, you know, like, I'll still back this. My favorite deck is a kind of casual deck. Yeah. It's a slow ramp deck.
Yeah.
Green and red werewolves, and I love it because it's fun.
Yeah, the rule set right now,
it gives you plenty of time to bullshit with the other person, which is part of the fun.
Mm-hmm. The rule set right now is not geared for casuals. It is. When I took my test to get the judges certificate, just the number of rules that I went over boggled my mind. Yeah, I knew a fair portion of them, but some of them I was looking at, I was like, when the fuck did they add this in? And if you're applying this rule set to a casual game or even just a willy-nilly tournament, it raises the level of stress for the player phenomenally to the number of shit you've got to remember every time you play a card.
So, in the month of June, on the 8th, we get both Battlebound, I believe that's right, Commander Anthology Volume 2, then on the 15th, Signature Spellbook Jace, which I'm not a fan of the art, I'm not a fan of Jace, but there's some good cards in there. MSRP of $20. If you can find it, I recommend maybe picking one up if you can afford it.
Emo for Jace! I'm sorry, what?
Then we've got the special dual deck coming out on the 22nd of June. And then August 10th, we get the new Commander set, which I'm really curious because they did Tribal, so what's their next theme? But that's just the month of June. You've got 4 products there coming out.
And a product the week following, pretty much.
Yeah, and those aren't even the main sets. I'm trying to find this here.
That's insane. 4 new product rollouts in the same month.
And MSRP for the EDH decks, I believe, is going to be in the $30 to $40 range. $20 for the Jace spellbook. For that special dual deck, they're probably going to be like $15-$20.
Okay, so just rough handling right now, we're looking at about $50.
Well, because remember, there's going to be 4 EDH decks. What if you want to get all 4?
Okay.
Okay, so that's $200.
And there's always that one EDH deck everybody wants, which is going to get the price ramped up on it super fast.
So we'll jack that up to $250, just because. Now we've got $250 just on the commanders, and then we've got $20 on Jay, so $270,
Yeah, 250 is actually better because even if one of those decks doesn't spike, we got to remember taxes.
There you go.
King wants his cut.
And beyond that, here in April, we've still got the Challenger decks, Elves versus Inventors, and Dominaria all coming out this month. See, July, we've got Core Set 2019. You know, right there, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's 9 things coming out between now and September. And in September, there's going to be another set. I mean, if you think about this, and even if you buy just one box and you participate in one pre-release event, that's like $150 right there.
Yeah, it's $150 bucks, and that's going to last you 3 months until the next box comes out.
Yeah, and then
you're basically paying $50 a month for material for product that you're only going to use 60 cards out of.
Oh, at best. And then this is the thing that's been bugging me, and many people have brought it up, and I'm sure everyone has noticed.
Okay,
the print quality of the cards. I literally bought a pack of Rivals of Ixalan. It was handed to me from the box. It was still factory sealed in its little container, and they were already bending. Cards I hadn't even pulled out of the pack yet were already starting to do that little curl thing.
They were starting to bow?
Yeah.
In the box. Were they foils?
There was a foil in there.
No, because foils are the ones that I hate for that curling bullshit.
Yeah. I just offloaded my entire collection of foils I wasn't using and got 5 cents a card for them. Just because they were foils. They could put weight on them and sell them back. But whatever. But these, even just normal cards. And it was a foil basic land. So no big loss. I got absolute jack nothing out of that pack. But the card quality is becoming horrendous. And if Wizards of the Coast fully admits it, there goes Wizards of the Coast, because then there'll be a class action lawsuit to get that product replaced. And it doesn't matter. You could have it in an airtight, perfect climate room, and your card will bend. Because the materials have gotten so crappy. The cards have gotten thinner. At least from me comparing them to some of the older cards I got from when I bought packs from back in the day.
Okay, so from a business standpoint, they're reducing the quality of the card stock to shave a few cents off here and there to save money in the long term.
But they jacked up the price of packs, what, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, they did.
I'd be okay just paying another 25 to 50 cents a pack if they were quality.
Yeah.
If these were cards that I knew that in order to damage them, because it used to be the joke when I first started, I had a guy pick up my Elspeth Sun's Champion, and he literally took it with just his thumbs and made a little arc out of it the long way and let go, and it sprung back. And the card was generally fine. But now, you take a card, I mean, just putting it in a sleeve will damage it.
Yeah, they're almost the same quality now as playing cards.
Worse.
Oh, damn. They're the same quality as cheap fucking business cards. Yeah. Yeah, the card quality that's not an issue I got, because I got out before the card quality started to dive, so...
Well,
thankfully, I'm not involved in that lawsuit. Wait, how's that thankful? Although, thankfully, yeah, because that'd be more work for me to do.
Now, and, like, on the other side of this, you know, now we're getting this inferior quality thing that's obviously costing Wizards less to make, and they're trying to shove out a lot more of it, and that sounds like a desperation move, just, you know, on its own. And then we're getting the 9 different products between here and September when the set following shows.
Well, you've got Core Set 2019.
So that's Point Remains.
Yeah.
That's 10 different products before the next arc of the story, at the least. All of it with inferior quality product and with, you know, a whole bunch of junk that's, or stuff, I'm not going to necessarily call it junk, but that is designed to gab and steal players from other things, or at least return their interest.
As an old school player, it seems that they've forgotten one of the best things they had going for them back around the year 2000 or so, up till about 2005, which is leave your audience wanting more.
Yeah.
Which is what they did when they released Revised. It was quite some time until another product came out. Homelands took some time. It took a while before Ice Age came out. It took a while before anything came out. I mean, yeah, they were releasing stuff, you know, when it came to Dark Ages and Antiquities. It took time. It left you waiting. There was like a 3, 4, 5, 6 month gap in between sets. And, you know, you only had the stuff that you had to play with until then. So you were waiting for it. You were like, oh, I heard about the new set. It was out in Wizard Magazine. When's it coming? And they would spoil a handful of the really good cards, and you were waiting for it. And when it came out, that shit flew off the shelves like hotcakes. They could not keep up with demand. And now they're shoving shit out so fast. I mean, you go to Target, you go to Walmart, you go to your local game store.
It's everywhere.
Stores, you go to your comic store. The stuff is everywhere, and it's not moving really well. It's kind of like Rose Tico, the playing cards.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sitting on shelves collecting dust.
And, you know, I think that's part of it, but they've fallen into this thing, like you were saying, people don't have attention spans anymore.
And even then, you know, if you're flooding the market, the only thing you're going to do is get wet. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get profit off wet.
Yeah, flooding the market only devalues the product that you're trying to push.
Yeah, but, you know, it just really gets me, because I enjoyed the game, I enjoyed the hell out of it, but I gave up on standard, because even when I had the cards, so many other people would either not be willing to play, or it was just so hard to do that. RFNMs at our LGS has devolved into two games of EDH. Maybe a draft, but that was only during UN, but you know.
It's gotten ridiculous what it's done.
Yeah, and going to other stores, you know, they may have healthier, but standard's dying out from a lot of places. People just don't want to keep up with it. Their cards are being banned because they're good. They're being, you know, just lost interest in when you got people picking up modern, Eternal, or EDH is really fun because there's so much shenanigans you can do and you can make a deck with almost anything. The ban list is so small.
Yeah, it's just saturating the market. It doesn't just devalue your product. It gets to a point where people get tired of your stuff. You know, if everywhere somebody turns around and the market is just saturated with one thing and one thing only, people get tired of it. Look at Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
People, or even superhero movies, people are getting tired of it because every time they turn around, there's four new superhero movies coming out every summer, or a new Star Wars movie coming out every fucking year or 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too much too quickly.
Yeah, it's
oversaturation.
It's ridiculous.
And 10 products worth of magic at your local LGS? People are going to stop paying attention to it.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, balls out math. That's something like $700 out of pocket. Over the course of months, yeah, sure, but that's still $700. That's a month's rent for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, for a lot of people. Maybe not here in Washington, but yeah. Still a lot of money for people.
So, we're coming up on the end here, guys. Let's end on a high note. Let's go around the table. I'll go last. Talk about your favorite Magic card, deck, or story.
All right. My favorite story. I get into a three-way, two-headed giant game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing a Jund deck. My partner pulls out a blue-white control board wipe deck. I'm like, dude, pull a different deck, please. He's like, no, this is my best deck. I'm going to play it. I'm like, God damn it. Because all I got with me is my Jund deck. That was my baby at the time. The opponent, who was hardcore sitting to my left, their big win on their side was a speed token elf generation deck.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of little weenies coming at you at high velocity. The other guy sitting to my right who had the big win was playing Eldrazi. So I summoned something and blow crap up. Oh boy. This was hell, right? I mean, looking at this, Eldrazi and Speed Elves. And my Jund deck is based on, you know, Devour. So I get, like, a hardcore badass motherfucker out there.
One,
or something like that. But the whole point is I gotta generate a fuck ton of tokens to beef that dude up. And I'm playing with a board wipe guy as my partner. We start off, and like 10 minutes in, I start getting my intro combo rolling. I'm like, okay, I can take control of the board now. Board wipe. Fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. Pissed, right? He wipes off the elves. He wipes out the Eldrazi. Okay, whatever. We're all starting at zero again. I'm like, dude, I can handle this. These guys are moving slowly. The elves are kind of chumped right now. He's saying he's mana hosed. As long as he stays mana hosed, I've got this shit. So we go into it again. I'm starting to roll into it. Dropping my cards. I get a couple of Mycoloths out. They are starting to generate fucking tokens like crazy. Board wipe. I'm like, dude, you do that seriously one more fucking time. Do it one more fucking time. I only have two more Mycoloths in my deck. Pissed. Because those are in that deck, the pivotal crop. If I can't get those Mycoloths rolling, my deck is fucking bone.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, okay, fine. I'm like, just sit there and defend. It's the way two-headed giant should work. One defends, one attacks. My deck is all aggression. Yours is a control deck.
Defend me.
Defend me.
And I will win for you.
Yeah. So we start getting into it. I start rolling that shit out. I finally get a Mycoloth back on the table. Dump everything I got on that Mycoloth and pray. He survives a few turns. He's still surviving. And next thing you know, he's dumping out like fucking 40 tokens a turn when I drop that second Mycoloth out. Because I just... And so now I got this Mycoloth on the table. He's like 42, just dumping out 40 tokens per turn. And the speed elf token guy's just looking at me like, what the fuck? And then the Eldrazi guy's like, I summon. I'm like, you destroy how many this turn? He's like, 7. Okay, I'll get rid of 7 tokens.
Son of a bitch!
Ooh, son of a bitch! And then finally, I'm just like, I start dropping some of my other shit on the table. And the guy sitting to me next to me is like, oh my god, your deck is brutal. I'm like, I know, you fucked it twice. Think about that. I've been fucked by 5 people at this table. And I'm winning. Yeah, because I took a pot shot at him for wiping my board twice. And fuck it, I turn around after about 7 turns after getting my first Michaeloth out. And I just looked at the Eldrazi guy, I'm like, I'm sorry, dude, but you got the biggest shit on the table. And if you were to go all out right now, it would hurt. So, boom! Tapped everything. Left us wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And the Speed Elf Token guy runs in. He knocks us down to 2 life left. And so, you know, the guy sitting next to me, he's like, what the fuck, what the fuck, what the fuck? I'm like, dude, here we go. Bam! More tokens. I was like, we got defenders. And go all out with everything but my defenders. It's like, there's not enough elves left after he blocks, if he blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And fucking just came over and steamrolled the Speed Elf Token the deck after I took out the Eldrazi. And I look over at the guy who is my partner. I'm like, good game, but learn not to fuck your partner. You know, fist bump. But yeah, that's just to wipe out a Speed Elf Token deck, an Eldrazi deck, and have my partner screwing me at the same time and get a win. Great. It's possibly one of the most satisfying victories I've ever had, except for the time that I took out a mill deck. And I'm gonna double down actually on good stories, because the mill deck is the first time I beat a pure mill.
Mm-hmm.
And this was actually with Mr. Hart. So if you're listening to this down there in Vegas, hey man, send some of that nice warmth up here. Anyway, he's playing a mill deck, and I've never, ever, 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 ever beat a mill deck. Not once. Mill has always destroyed me. And I pull out my cheap-ass $30 slime deck. I have one card in that deck. If I add it back in the deck from my sideboard, the monetary value of the deck doubles. Suddenly, it's a $60 deck. Now it's a $30 deck. Now it's a $60 deck. One card, right? But that one card fucks me up, so I didn't play it. So here I'm playing a cheap-ass $30 slime deck against pure mill, and he is...
Hardcore mill, too. I remember hardcore, that deck.
Yes, hardcore mill. And the best part is the slime deck is based off of destruction and recursion. So every time he mills me, all he's doing is feeding me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was this by chance a blue-green deck?
No, his was, I believe, blue-white.
No, yours.
Mine? No, it's pure green. It's green-black.
Okay.
Green, black, grave recursion, lots of slimes. And every time he mills me, he's just feeding me. So the only cards I got to hope to get are actually recursion cards. And I just start dropping them out. I start pulling cards out of my graveyard and putting them on the battlefield. And since he's playing more mill, he can't really do much on the combat side. But he's still holding me pretty fair on that. And next thing he knows, I'm just dropping acidic slimes and then fucking using my Codger's Closet to flip them. And his lands blow up right in front of him. I think one turn I took out 4 of his lands. Next thing he knows, he's down to 2 lands. And then when he drops another one, I'm like, no, you're going to stay at 2. No, you're going to stay at 2. And I just purposely kept him at 2 lands to piss him off. I just nickled and dimed him for like 1 and 2 points per turn. But I finally destroyed him because I got his mana down to such a level he could not play anything to mill me anymore. And I got half my deck sitting there next to in my graveyard. I'm like, what do I want to pull out this turn? So basically, he's just giving me free cards just to rifle through and put on the table whenever I feel like it. So nice. Beating a mill deck for the first time since I started playing, it felt great.
It's beautiful.
It felt great because going into that match, I felt I was going to get hosed. It was just another mill deck. I was going to lose. And to pull a win out of it, especially with a cheap-ass $30 deck.
Precon at that, it sounds like.
No, it wasn't a precon. Actually, a friend of mine made it. And unfortunately, he got out of Magic, but when he came to his deck building skills, he would just put shit in there that he didn't even realize. The guy's, he's like a kung fu genius in deck building.
An idiot savant.
I wouldn't say idiot savant because he'll take the idiot part personally.
Mm.
That's just his personality. But he's definitely a deck building savant. He also built my Praetor deck for me. And When I was playing that, he's like, there's combos in there I didn't even see. And I'm like, how? I thought this shit was put in here on purpose. It's an awesome combo. But yeah, he built that little $30 deck for me. And I took out a mill deck. And I've been playing Magic since, you know, third, since Revised came out. Mm. So that's a lot of times to go get a 100% losses against mill decks.
Yeah.
So, and to finally get the victory.
And to finally get the victory over one so soundly, you know, and watch my opponent get crushed and see him driven before me. Mm-hmm. You hear the lamentations of the nerdettes.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. Anyway, I'll pass the torch to somebody else before I continue on.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to take this one. So I've got 2 as well. It seems like it's going to be the running topic.
Okay.
The first is my werewolf deck. I've talked about it a couple of times. It is a wolf, werewolf, gentle spew deck. It's generally, you know, it's got the 4 Emmer Wolves and a few other goodies in there. But generally speaking, it is a wolf and werewolf themed crawl. I've got, I think, two creatures in there that are not, and they're used rather specifically for other things. One is Moonveil Dragon, which is pretty fun. 3/3 red for a 5/5 flying that has fire breathing, but instead of this creature, all creatures. So for one red, I'm adding one power to every single creature on my board. Slap. And the other one is, I think, a Grave Worm, which I would use after something died. I'd summon it in post-combat main, and then throw it away to feed the pack, and get 8 free wolf tokens, which are, by that point, 6/6s. And the other... So that's my fun deck. The other... My favorite memory, I think, was me going up to a gentleman at Con who had a malformed hand, and just sitting down and playing with him, because, you know, he looks lonely, he's shuffling a deck, he looks like he wants to play. I kind of get the feeling that nobody's walking over to him because he's got a gimp hand. Fuck it. I'll make this guy's day a little better. I sit down with him. He plays a recursion, or a America control deck, which is based around spells with rebound. So every turn, he's got something throwing for free. And he had the capability to, and I play it with him. I lose the first one. I'm like, okay, I have a way around your opponents don't get combat phase spell. Let me switch decks. So I switch out to a pure black zombie deck that is just, it's horrendously garbage because it's just thrown together. It is massively oversized and there's no consistency to it. But I set it up. I played it. He got his combo off. And then I play a Vengeful Dead. Vengeful Dead is a 3 and a black for a 3/4 zombie. When this or any other zombies you control die, each opponent loses one life. I got myself up to like 10 swamps on the field, dropped a mutilate, and nuked him with my own units. Victory at any cost. My units are already dead. What's they gonna care?
I did something very similar using Soul's Fire.
You've told me that story.
Yeah. Take 2,000 damage.
You block it. Okay.
Okay.
I'm gonna throw it at you now.
What about you, Doc?
So, I gotta tell you about the deck first. I mean, you've seen the deck, technically, so. So, it's extremely passive deck.
Yes, I've seen Doc's deck.
The deck was usually a team type of deck that I like to play, 2v2, but occasionally I'd run into 1v1 situations with it somehow. Occasionally when. But basically it had a bunch of walls. I think it had like a Spirit of Faith or something. It was basically a wall that granted like a health bonus for each white on the field or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I had Wall of Bone. I had Paladin and Vec, so he had natural protection colors before the whole all colorness shenanigans game, which ruined that deck. Because the whole idea was just to get like two cards with all the protection that it needed, except for white, so I could throw enchantments on it to just spew its power. I also had... Where it became a decent team player deck was the, Knights, or... It's basically a defender, or not a defender, but a defend all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could defend any number of creatures.
Oh, Palace Guard?
Yeah, Palace Guard.
Yeah, this creature may block any number of creatures.
Three of those, and then I could give it 4 protections of color.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had one... I had a... protection of color green and blue that costs 1 white, 1 colorless, and throw that on the palace guards, and then I had 2 others for red and black. And this was a black-white deck, so I had also, I get to choose whether I get to assassinate, and just ended up fighting against hordes of enemies while just sitting there gaining life per turn. And just sitting there and being like, oh, well, this color, if it was fighting against a monocolor deck, you'd just focus that and then just keep swinging at you because you can't defend against protection from color. I just had a lot of fun with that. Just like, can't do anything.
Nice. Well, for me, to narrow down to 2, there's my favorite deck I built for Standard a long time ago in Theros. And then there's my favorite deck overall. The Standard deck I built I called Hail Hydra. And I built it because I hated blue, so Mistcutter Hydra was the card I built off of. And then I got Planeswalkers, and I found my favorite combo of Planeswalkers. Xenagos the Reveler, Garruk Caller of Beasts, and Domri Raid. Why I love those three is because with their CMCs, if I draw them right, I can ult all three of them on the same turn, get massive Hydras out that have haste and pro blue, as well as hexproof and a bunch of other abilities, and swing out. And if I can't get that through, then I try to keep up just enough mana to cast Praetor's Rapport, or Predator's Rapport, and gain life equal to the power and toughness of my biggest creature. So I would go, I think, after Scourge of Skullveil, or... No, I think it was Hero's Bane? Hero's Bane Hydra. Where you could just pay 4 mana into it and double it. With Xenagos, you get mana for each creature you have, and I'd have a whole bunch of dorks out. Yeah, it got really gross to the point where I think one time I gained, like, 6 million life. Because I just kept doubling, and it was like, oh, you're gonna try and bolt me because I'm at 2 life now? Nope! Yeah, it was great. And, I mean, I got known for that deck. I had buddies, like, we'd play against each other, just our signature decks, all day, every day. But then my favorite deck right now is my Marin of Clan Nel'Toth EDH deck. It's the one that I get the promos for, the special edition cards. I'm gonna see about foiling it out, maybe. But it's a sac deck. The reason I love it is because I can do so many shenanigans that don't affect me other than my creatures leaving and then one of them comes back for free. I get bonuses, I get mana, I get to mill someone, I get more creatures because a creature died. And I threw in Infinite Squirrels because I thought it'd be funny, and I finally found an Earthcraft for decent. And I didn't realize this, but you can get Infinite Squirrels on turn 3 in EDH just by drawing the cards. Turn 1, Forest into Sol Ring. Turn 2... another forest, put the squirrel's nest onto something, have a mana fizzle. And then I, off the top, I drew Earthcraft. I was like, alright, I'm playing a swamp, I'm playing Earthcraft, I create infinite squirrels, leave the land untapped, and it's, you know, I've got 8 million squirrels. Turn goes by. I create another 8 million. Turn goes by. I create another 8 million. Finally, it's the end of the turn right before mine. I create 8 billion. And then someone, hilariously, goes to Rakdos Charm me. So each one of my creatures deals me a damage. In response, I sack them all for mana, which it was Ashnod's Altar, so I got 2 colorless for each of them. And then I turn around and use that mana for, I forget the black X spell, and just give everything on the board that's remaining, like, negative a couple billion. Yeah, the Black Sun Zenith. I think that's the sorcery? No, it's an instant. But yeah, I do that and it shuffles into my library and I'm just like, alright, so it's my turn. I'm going to create another few million squirrels. And pass turn. And I end up winning that one because everyone scooped. But yeah, you know, that's just my favorite deck and that's the grossest thing I've done with it. I can't remember the exact card I used to kill everything else on the board, but I think that was it. But yeah, so that's Magic. This one went a bit over, so...
Don't worry about it. So anyway, that's this week. We'll be back to you, give you another podcast in about 2 weeks. Yep. And we're already talking Star Wars and some other things, and I believe Doc Martin, our newest member, has quite the burr up his butt about Electronic Arts. About Eat Shit Games.
Oh, yeah.
So, we're going to see you guys in a couple of weeks. Till then, game the fuck on.
Have fun, y'all motherfuckers.
Roll some dice, damn it.
Play the game.